Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Oklahoma has 142 hospitals. 137 of them belong to the Oklahoma Hospital Association, a trade association founded in 1919. All 50 states and Puerto Rico have their own state hospital associations, and they all work in conjunction with the American Hospital Association, which was one of the major supporters of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. The state of Oklahoma, as you probably know, has chosen not to accept federal Medicaid expansion, which would provide insurance for almost 600,000 uninsured Oklahomans. Today, I'm discussing that issue, amongst many others, with Craig Jones, the president and CEO of the Oklahoma Hospital Association. He's our guest today in studio at Studio Tulsa on Health. Craig Jones, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health.
Thanks, John.
I'm glad you could be here. Thanks for coming down. I want to know, just give our listeners some background. How big is the Oklahoma Hospital Association? That is, what is its scope, mission, and how many hospitals do you represent?
Well, Oklahoma has approximately 142 general acute care hospitals in the state, and we represent currently 137 of those, so the vast, vast majority of them.
Why are there some that are out? Are they sort of VA hospitals? Or?
Well, some of them are small, and from a dues structure standpoint, some of them don't necessarily see the value of what the association does. But we have always easily represented 90-plus percent.
Okay, and how old is the association?
It actually goes back to 1919.
Okay, so almost the beginnings of statehood.
Right, exactly.
And you, in the 90-plus percent, you represent some, I know just from working in hospitals, but, you know, elsewhere, but also in Oklahoma, some of the hospitals are for-profit entities and some are not-for-profit, correct?
Correct.
And is there a breakdown of?
You know, that's a good question. We're actually updating our database, but the vast majority of them would be not-for-profit. The next largest category would be probably those that are affiliated with city, county, or public trusts, what we call some type of a governmental affiliation. And then probably the next area would be those that are faith-based, Catholic systems and things of that sort. And then we do have, over the years, we've had an increasing number of for-profit tied in primarily with national chains.
So it's a very diverse constituency,
absolutely,
so to speak. And so how do you manage to bring everybody together under one umbrella? I mean, there are certainly common interests for hospitals in terms of how, you know, I would imagine dealing with government is one of the primary aspects.
Well, it is a challenge because Oklahoma, of those 137 or so members, half of those are going to be 100 beds or less, so small rural.
Oh, wow.
And half of that half are probably going to be under 30 beds. So we do have, when you look at the two metropolitan areas, Tulsa and Oklahoma City, those two metropolitan areas would comprise the largest concentration of beds. But as you know, there are beds in the smaller hospitals, and Oklahoma has a great number of communities that the hospital represents either the first or second largest employer. So you're right, the issues play out much differently, whether you're talking large urban systems versus small rural. But from an advocacy standpoint, which is a good bit of what we do, trying to represent the interests and advocate on behalf of those interests, largely at the state capitol, but also nationally, those kinds of issues cross the gamut. They may play out a little differently depending upon the size of the hospital, but there's so much going on in terms of transition that everyone is looking for new answers to old questions.
And so your members lean on you pretty heavily then, don't they, in terms of, I guess you could say, protecting their interests, but advocating for them, and because I know that many hospitals, both the big ones and the small ones, the urban and the rural, are struggling right now with the transitions, as you call it. I mean, we're going from we're changing, in a sense, the payment system, right, from a fee-for-service-based model to accountable care models. And, I mean, is that hitting all-sized hospitals across the board?
Undoubtedly. In fact, the kind of the vernacular that's been popular in the last few years, Ian Morrison, a futurist, coined the term going from first curve to second curve, almost a paradigm shift, if you will. Whereas you say in the past, the first curve would entail such things as everything was based upon volume and was fee for service. And now you're looking, the second curve would be characterized by outcome, quality-based, bundled payment, much more integrated care versus a more of a scattered, fragmented system.
This is a huge generalization, but does it feel like light speed? I mean, are hospitals sort of in a terrified mode, or are many of them, you know, coping with it well, or is, I guess it just probably runs across the gamut? Some are prepared.
I would say that it's not so much that it's happening in a speedily way. It's the fact, probably a better analogy is we're managing in a gap between the industry moving from that first curve to the second curve. I heard a person describe it as having one foot on the dock and one foot on the boat, and the boat's moving. But the question is, when exactly do you make that transition? Because you cannot operate the elements that will speak to success of your performance are going to be in many ways decidedly different between the two segmentations. And the financing of it and where the financing, what the financing is going to be directed towards is really going to probably direct that the speed of that transition as much as anything.
So do you find that member hospitals are struggling more with that aspect of finances and the sort of the reimbursement for services provided, or is it more sort of the regulatory apparatus, if you will, of either, you know, the FDA or really, I guess, CMS is what we're talking about, Medicare, and all the rules and regulations, and plus all the new rules and regulations under healthcare reform, stimulus, high tech?
Well, your question really is probably two sides of the same coin, because the government, and mainly the federal government, represents such a high percentage of most hospitals' business, broken out between Medicare, which is largely for the elderly, and Medicaid, which is a state-federal partnership for the blind, disabled, poor, single moms, children. And so when you have a lot of regulations, as you've mentioned, that are there's such a concern about the spending curve and the increased amount of money that the government is paying on behalf of healthcare, that there are increased regulations to reduce that. So you have hospitals and other healthcare providers that have been dealing with the tightening down, if you will, of the reimbursement while their costs continue to go up by virtue of the aging population, by virtue of increased chronic disease, by increased need of staying up with technology. So you have those two elements that are really pulling the hospital in opposite directions.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, today sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today, Craig Jones, President and CEO of the Oklahoma Hospital Association. And you have been at the helm of Oklahoma Hospital Association for 14 years?
Since 1999.
How did you wind up in that role?
Well, my background is healthcare administration. I have a master's in health administration, and thereby that took me into the realm of managing and directing hospitals. I actually started my career here in Tulsa at Hillcrest Medical Center.
Wow.
And then that took me to Norman, where I was at the what is now the Norman Regional Hospital for 18 years prior to moving to the association.
And let's just talk about your tenure in the 14 years. I mean, it's got to have been a whirlwind of change. I mean, what were some of the priorities of the association or some of the main concerns early on versus nowadays? Or is it the same issues that continue? I mean, it's always advocacy on behalf of hospitals.
Well, that's an interesting question. I've always, when I came in and had to start making more talks and presentations about, you know, what do hospitals do and what's the association do, I eventually centered a good many of my talks around the idea that there are, at that time, were five critical success factors for hospitals. There were the quality of your services, there was the scope and magnitude of your medical staff, there were your employees, there was your plant and equipment, and then there was financial stability. Those five conditions still exist, but what makes them successful today, what you have to do to be successful in those areas, are dramatically changing. And then I've added a sixth one, and that has to do with community engagement, because there's so much more of an emphasis on population health, the area that you're involved with community medicine, and just particularly in Oklahoma, which we have such a poor state of the state's health, The association has been very vigorous the last few years in formally saying hospitals have a role to play in advancing the health, not so much the medical care because they're engaged in that, but advancing the health improvement of their communities.
That goal, does that come from the members themselves, or is it something sort of from the organization to the member hospitals?
Well, it's come from the association. Our mission is to advance the well-being of Oklahomans through the healthcare services that our members provide. It's a partnership between our association and those individual hospitals. You know, when you're assessing the environment and you realize what a difference the health of the community makes on your ability to provide adequate and efficient and effective health care, you have a role to play. I mean, I think the association is not just in this for what's good for hospitals. We really do take seriously that this idea of advancing the welfare of Oklahomans is like a puzzle, and there are many pieces that have to be played to make that puzzle come to fruition. Hospitals have a key piece or two of that puzzle. And so where we can play or influence other pieces of that puzzle, like health improvement, and as I mentioned earlier, since hospitals represent such a significant part of the economy and the presence in a lot of Oklahoma communities, it stands to reason that we ought to look at what resources can we bring to bear to be able to help advance the health of that community.
Really, it sounds very positive to me. I wasn't aware of that. I really like hearing that. It's good to know. One of the big issues that I've seen in the newspapers and on some of the blogs is really this issue of Oklahoma and whether or not essentially we're going to accept the Medicaid expansion that the Supreme Court about a year ago now ruled was coercive. In other words, that states were not obligated to take the Medicaid expansion, but certainly the federal government would strongly recommend that the states do in order to essentially expand the number of patients that would then have health insurance, be eligible for health care. And I think that was one of the key points, if you will, of Obamacare, that in order to really expand health insurance to, you know, I guess upwards of 32 plus million more of the 50 or so million uninsured, Medicaid was going to be a key driver. Now, I know about half the states seem like they're going to accept, and roughly half have said, you know, no way, we're not going to do it. And I think some of the reasoning behind that is really that even though for the first, I guess, 3 years or something, the federal government's picking up 100% of the bill, governors and legislatures are very concerned about the state's portion of that bill that will reach 10% within, I guess, over, by 2020, the year 2020. And so that was certainly a concern Governor Fallon mentioned. The AHA, the American Hospital Association, I believe was a big supporter or signed on, in a sense, to the Obamacare legislation because I think hospitals, and correct me if I'm wrong, hospitals are in favor of the idea of more folks having insurance because it solves one of their problems, which is, especially in some urban areas, lots of uninsured folks and providing a great deal of uncompensated care. I just packed a lot into that. But the question really is, how does the association feel, if you can answer such a question, or your member hospitals feel about the legislature or the governor's decision not to expand Medicaid here in Oklahoma?
Well, let me answer that by stepping back one step.
Sure.
On average, every third Oklahoman that you pass on the street either does not have any health insurance or is covered by Medicaid, which is actually under-insuring that patient for what their needs are. So the lack of appropriate health care coverage in Oklahoma is part of the reason why we have such a poor state of the state's health. So that naturally says, well, gosh, you know, shouldn't we try to improve covering more people with health insurance? The question is, who's going to pay for that? So you look at what the Affordable Care Act did, and as you said, it was going to increase the coverage of the 55 or so million people that don't have health insurance. 32 million were going to either through the expansion of Medicaid as well as the federal exchanges. So, yes, hospitals, when you look at the fact that on average in any given year, hospitals are rendering in excess of $500 million in the cost, not the charge, in the cost of care that they don't receive any reimbursement for.
That's just Oklahoma you're
talking about. That's just Oklahoma.
Wow, okay.
So you're looking at, well, gosh, you'd like to have more people covered. What's the best way to do that? Well, here you had the federal government that was willing to do this for 3 years. Now, you have the ideology of people who, you know, in the politics just clearly say, what's the role of government? They don't want to see the government do this. They want to do it more private. One of the best examples that we have been advocating is there's a plan called Insure Oklahoma, which a Republican legislature in Oklahoma passed, and it was a public-private partnership. It was a premium assistance program where the employee kicked in some dollars, 15% of the premium. The employer, small employers it was designed for, kicked in 25%, and the state kicked in 60%. So we agree with the American Hospital Association that we ought to have coverage for all, paid for by all. And when we say paid for by all, you're saying to the degree that you can have some skin in the game, you ought to be contributing to that. So we've done all kinds of modeling, John, on this. And you know, there's talk about Oklahoma can't afford this. Well, we can show that Oklahoma can afford it. The point is, and the governor is advocating for an Oklahoma plan.
Mm-hmm.
We're fine with an Oklahoma plan. In fact, there's going to be a report released just next week by the consultants that are examining how this might work in Oklahoma.
This is the Levitt Group?
Correct.
Okay.
And yet, our position is, if you're trying to cover 700,000 more Oklahomans, and I guess I should go back and say that even hasn't been decided. Part of our concern is how many of these people who aren't insured, what's the appropriate amount? Are we satisfied with having, you know, 700 people that don't have an insurance? There's no plan. There's no even a goal to say, well, this is what we want to accomplish. Now, how many different ways can we accomplish it? But we're all in favor of an Oklahoma plan. If we don't need the federal government, fine. But we don't believe that Oklahoma can address its needs without accepting federal dollars. There's so much concern about accepting federal dollars for health insurance. We don't seem to have that problem for roads and education and corrections and things of that sort. And you go back to when Medicare and Medicaid was established in the 60s. We've been changing and tweaking and modifying and adding to that national major health policy for years. The ACA, I've got some major concerns with the Affordable Care Act. I think there are some great things about the Affordable Care Act. I think we just need to roll up our sleeves and tackle it together because it will continue to be a national, state, private partnership, I'm convinced, going forward.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann sitting in for Rich Fisher. And today we're talking with Craig Jones, President and CEO of the Oklahoma Hospital Association, about hospitals in Oklahoma, 142 of them, 137 of which are members of the Oklahoma Hospital Association, and talking also about healthcare reform. And you mentioned Medicare and Medicaid when they passed, and they were certainly controversial in their time in the early and then mid-60s. There was a lot of, I think, organized opposition, really, certainly amongst physicians, my own profession, against Medicare as socialized medicine, and I think probably some popular sentiment against it as well. And once those programs were adopted, they became, you know, enormously popular, also extremely costly, way more than mm-hmm. the projections initially mm-hmm. showed. And I wonder if, you know, we're going to face a similar thing here with the Affordable Care Act, and there still seems to be a great deal of opposition to it, several attempts federally, and I suppose statewide, at repealing it, not with any success. Where I think down the road we're going to see it become very popular. I mean, one aspect of that, a small aspect, but it's 3 million insured lives, is these 26-year-olds and under, these basically college kids and recent, you know, graduate, those age are now able to be covered under their parents' insurance for about 2 years now, and that's been hugely popular. That's admittedly a low-cost group, right? Those generally are young, healthy people, and so it's not a huge stretch in terms of the cost side to cover those folks, but again, it seemed logical, and it's something that's basically fait accompli at this point and very popular. So I guess I'm wondering, if we could somehow, whether it's, as you say, an Oklahoma plan or expansion or reenactment of Insure Oklahoma or just accepting of Medicaid, it seems like that would be something that would quickly catch on and solve a lot of problems. It would create some cost problems, I suppose, down the road. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. In fact, it's interesting when you talked about the passage of Medicaid and Medicare, they were very controversial. Oklahoma was one of the first 10 states, though, that signed on. It took about 16 years, as I recall, before all the states eventually got involved. And that's the way things are. And, I think there clearly are things that ought to be looked at. But there's got to be, I think, first of all, what's the goal? What are we trying to accomplish? There's a lot of ideological differences between the private sector and the public sector and whether we should be a single payer or whatever. But meanwhile, we have people that have very, very keen needs, and they're not going to be able to do it on their own. And so I think there is a societal basis for that. You know, we've had these recent tornadoes in Oklahoma, and hospitals are the safety net for that type of care. Not only do people come and seek care, they sought shelter at a lot of these hospitals. And so the public expects the hospital to be there. You know, with EMTALA, the federal regulation, that a hospital cannot turn down anybody who comes into their emergency department. They have to screen and stabilize that individual within the scope of their business. So we expect, but yet from a payment standpoint, we don't seem to approach it like we do. It's almost like a social service, but we don't reimburse it like we do the police and fire or education or things of that sort. And that's part of the problem. And I think that going forward, we'll need to kind of look at all different kinds of models out there. But the flip side of that is there's a lot of things that we could be doing individually. Again, back to your area of community medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's estimated that 40% of the cost of healthcare is based upon our own behaviors, and we're overutilizing the system now for things that probably aren't as effective in terms of the outcome. So we're learning so much, but I think we're going to have to incentivize people differently, whether it be through their employer or perhaps even through the federal government or the state government, to change how we utilize and how we care for ourselves. Huge difference.
Non-smoking bonuses or discounts, as the case may be.
Well, that's it. You know, and that's been a very controversial issue here in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we actually advocated for a bill that would allow hospitals the opportunity. Hospitals and businesses are prevented from not hiring people who smoke.
Is that part of local control? Is that?
That's part of the issue.
Uh-huh.
You know, why is it that we know it's bad, and it's not like we're saying you can't smoke, but why are we, if we're wanting to advocate for health, like I was saying earlier,
mm-hmm.
why can't we take the position that we want to demonstrate and we want to promote healthy work environments? And so therefore, you're welcome to smoke, but if you smoke, we don't want to hire you because you're not contributing exemplary to the kind of condition that we want. The legislature won't buy that. And that just seems so contrary to where we need to go.
I don't know if it started there, but certainly it's been popularly promoted by Dr. Roizen at the Cleveland Clinic is mm-hmm. the first place or one of the sort of leading edge places that has said, if you smoke, we're not even hiring you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting debate. I can see, again, the health merit, but again,
sure.
the sort
and
of the
governor is
liberty.
Very supportive of that. In fact, I think she's interested, and there's a coalition working on perhaps even a statewide referendum to put this to the vote of the people.
Huh. Well, that mm-hmm. would be interesting. So does the Oklahoma Hospital Association, do you collaborate with some of those that are your closer partners with or more closely affiliated with, or not at all? I mean, it's Oklahoma and then the American Hospital Association.
There are subgroups who may have more similar characteristics get together. And then the American Hospital Association has the country divided up into regions. And so we also spend a fair amount of time with hospitals and other health providers from Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma comprise a four-state region because there are similar issues
mm-hmm.
to how they may play out there. So we take advantage of anything and everyone who we think is a stakeholder that will help us advance what we're trying to do.
I guess what I wonder, though, is would there be a chance for state hospital associations in states that don't accept federal Medicaid dollars to partner with states that do to somehow work on an advocacy position or to at least work together for best practices or lessons learned, or perhaps for the states that don't accept the dollars to collaborate on ways of not necessarily getting around the block, but in terms of, you know, how can we help mm-hmm. our folks? Because I mean, my sense from talking to hospital executives is, you know, they want this. They want the expansion because they, you know, this as you point out, the $500 million in Oklahoma alone is a lot of money for, and this is just the cost, you said, not even the charges, just the
correct.
Cost. So if you were to look at the charges, we know from, say, the Stephen Brill article, it could well be over, you know, five times that, right, in mm-hmm. terms of billions of dollars of money that's charged that isn't reimbursed mm-hmm. or paid. So it's a lot of money.
Well, we do collaborate. In fact, five other what we call red states that have the same political ideology that Oklahoma has as it relates to not accepting Medicaid expansion. And we had a meeting with the deputy administrator of CMS to say, look, you know, politically it doesn't appear as if our states are going to buy into this. But what kind of flexibility can the federal government provide? I was actually talking about, can there be some way to funnel dollars through our existing Insure Oklahoma plan, which the federal government has already approved? And of course, that waiver, that federal approval to do that program is up at the end of this calendar year. And there's been a lot of press talking about the fact that we requested the extension and the federal government turned it down. Well, what they're looking for is, since Medicaid expansion begins January, they were looking for, well, you're only benefiting small employers and low-income employees. Sure, we'll be happy to work with you, but we want to see you broaden and benefit more people. Well, why wouldn't we be interested in talking about that? So, yes, those kind of states where you have like advocacy positions, we're always looking for ways to partner on those things.
We're almost out of time, so I guess what I'd like to ask you is, for a prediction on, you know, you talked about Medicare and Oklahoma being one of the first 10 states to adopt Medicare, but it taking 16 years for all 50 states to get in. Do you foresee that sort of patchwork adoption down the road once we have some outcomes data about how patients, or specifically, I guess in your case, how hospitals do financially and systematically, organizationally in states that accept Medicaid expansion? Is that something you see?
Well, I'm not... I quite frankly don't care whether the dollars come through Medicaid, you know, your home, some other fund. I think we need to find a way for those people who literally can't afford it. And there are people who can and should be obtaining health insurance. I think it will come down to a public-private partnership. I think the Levitt Group study that we've referenced is going to be a good first step to say, how can Oklahoma approach this? But I don't believe Oklahoma is going to be able to do it on its own. But I think we've got to infuse into this, John, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? If you know what the goal is, then you can garner all kinds of stakeholders to say, how many different ways can we get to that goal? But we really haven't defined what we want to accomplish here in Oklahoma. We talk a lot about what is or what isn't or what we're against, but what is it that we're for in terms of trying to advance and improve the health of Oklahomans? And I'm always optimistic. You know, there's a lot of challenges, and I respect the different positions that are out there, but I really want to get towards and move down the road, and I think a lot of other people do too. It's going to take compromise, and hopefully everybody's willing to bend a little.
Well said. Well, we'll look forward to the Levitt Report, certainly next week. Craig Jones, I want to thank you so much for coming to Tulsa and coming to Studio Tulsa so we could talk about the Oklahoma Hospital Association. Craig Jones is the president and CEO of the Oklahoma Hospital Association, and he was our guest on Studio Tulsa today. Thank you very much. Well, that's Studio Tulsa on Health for today. Our show is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.